welcome to the Thursday edition of Community Watch and Comment, the on-the-ground edition, where we lift up voices of social justice and direct action. I'm Esther Avaram, your host. Today, peace activists in Virginia call out politicians over their record on gun control, and a man from Guatemala travels to the U.S. to tell us how a U.S.-based silver mine is destroying the air, water, and land in his town. First, thanks to my brothers in sports, Eitan Thomas and Dave Zirin of The Collision. Also, want to thank all of our listeners who are stepping up in this, our final week of our so important spring fund drive for WPFW, your listener-powered station for jazz and justice in the nation's capital. I also want to thank you for staying with us and supporting. Our goal is $500 to raise during the next 60 minutes. It's our last week of the drive, so if you've been waiting, come on board. Only $10 a month to become a sustaining member. And we know that's not much for this rare space that lifts up voices of activism and direct action. The number to call is 202-588-9739 or 1-800-222-9739. Okay, first, our headlines. A new report reveals how closely state and local law enforcement officials at so-called fusion centers across the country were monitoring the day-to-day activities of the Occupy Wall Street movement. A trove of email and reports obtained by the Partnership for Civil Justice Fund and provided to the New York Times reveal a massive coordinated effort by federal and local officials along with security contractors, corporate interests, and military staff to share minute details about peaceful Occupy protests and speaking events. Fusion centers have received hundreds of millions in federal funds since their creation after 9/11, but a Senate subcommittee report found they have failed to yield any significant information for fighting terrorism. The next 4 months are going to determine the future of the Internet, as we covered 2 weeks ago down at the FCC. Will it remain free and open with equal access to all? A coalition of organizations which held the demonstration 2 weeks ago is continuing to make it a focus of their work because the Internet is an essential tool for people who have access to information and to communicate with each other, and it is central to the work of activists. To join the letter writing campaign or to get involved in other ways, go to freepress.net or popularresistance.org. Maya Angelou, the esteemed poet, writer, and actress, died Wednesday in her Winston-Salem home. The literary giant, most known for her autobiography, I Know Why the Caged Bird Sings, and Phenomenal Woman, a collection of poetry, was one of the foremost African-American writers and thinkers of her time. But society often forgets her legacy as a fierce civil rights activist and someone who did not shy away from political controversy. Writing in thinkprogress.org, Karima Towns listed 5 facts you should know about Maya Angelou, the freedom fighter. Angelou was a close associate with Malcolm X prior to his assassination and had plans to start a new effort with him to advance African-American rights. According to Angelou, she intended to jumpstart the Organization of African-American Unity with Malcolm X. The two intended to vocalize the issues plaguing black people in the U.S. to the United Nations with the hope that the international body would assist in their struggle. 2. Angelou was a leader of the Southern Christian Leadership Conference, SCLC. SCLC, an organization founded by Martin Luther King, which preached nonviolence, was instrumental in arranging protests and voter registration drives. Before becoming a member, she arranged the Cabaret for Freedom, a 5-week show that raised money for the organization. After the play's success, she was asked by Bayard Rustin to become the Northern Coordinator for the SCLC and was instrumental in fundraising and promoting the organization's mission. 3. Angelou supported Cuban leader Fidel Castro despite his rivalry with U.S. leaders. She once wrote, "Of course Castro never called himself white, so he was okay from the get. Anyhow, America hated Russians, as black people often said, was it no communist country that put my grandpapa in slavery? Was it no communist lynched my papa or raped my mama?" Her commentary aligned with Pan-Africanism and anti-colonial sentiments, according to which people of color, particularly those in the African diaspora, identify their struggles as one part of a larger systemic fight. 4. Angelou was a staunch advocate for marriage equality. Angelou personally called New York State Senator Shirley Huntley to voice her support of same-sex marriage, which the state was considering, and the senator opposed. During the call, she said, "To love someone takes a lot of courage," she said. "How much more is one challenged when the love is of the same sex, and the laws say, I forbid you from loving this person?" Huntley ended up voting for the measure. 5. Angelou made a strong moral case for the action to recover the kidnapped Nigerian schoolgirls. Angelou never lost her commitment to social justice. Earlier this month, she tweeted about the kidnapped girls in Nigeria. And those are the words of Karima Towns writing about Maya Angelou in thinkprogress.org on that website. Maya Angelou, the esteemed poet, writer, and actress, joined the ancestors on Wednesday at the age of 86. We'll be right back with some Virginia residents who have a report card for U.S. Senator Mark Warren. We'll be right back.
I don't want nobody to give me nothing. Open up the door. I'll get it myself. I don't want nobody to give me nothing. Nothing. Open up the door. I'll get it myself. I don't give me integration.
And welcome back to the Thursday edition of Community Watch and Comment. I'm Esther Varam, your host of On the Ground. On Saturday, as U.S. Senator Mark Warren of Virginia announces his candidacy for re-election, he will be given a report card of sorts by members of the Blue Ridge Coalition Against Gun Violence. The coalition, which includes several organizations in Virginia, will be handing out the report card in downtown Roanoke, where Warren is scheduled to make his announcement. The group has also produced a report card for their area state senator, John Edwards, who represents the Roanoke area. Edwards received a D. The citizens' action targeting a U.S. senator is taking place as the United States is still riveted by coverage of the latest mass shooting near UC Santa Barbara in California, which left 7 people dead. Richard Martinez, who lost his 20-year-old son Christopher in the shooting, used his moment of grief and mourning to lay the blame for the massacre squarely at the feet of politicians and the gun lobby headed by the NRA, or the National Rifle Association. At an emotional memorial held for those slain, Martinez was joined by other parents in saying that the deaths of their loved ones would not be in vain and that they will fight for sane gun laws. According to the Gun Violence Archive, more than 4,100 people in the United States have been killed by firearms this year. Two of the activists who will be on the ground this weekend in Virginia are joining me this morning, Mary Croft of the Blue Ridge Coalition Against Gun Violence. Welcome, Mary.
Good morning. How are you doing?
Oh, I'm fine. Thank you. And Catherine Cable Stromberg, also of the coalition, and a member of Virginians for Responsible Gun Laws since 2007, when there was the mass shooting at Virginia Tech. Welcome, Catherine.
Hello.
Well, Mary, I'll start with you. So I've looked at Mark Warner's report card on gun violence, and you've given him a D. Tell me why.
I'm sorry, were you, this is Mary, were you directing that towards me or Catherine?
Oh, yes, to Mary, yes, yes. I hope you can hear me okay. There's a lot of noise on the line. Try not to be on a speaker and try not to, like, move the phone. Like, if you're moving around, just kind of stay still. Thanks. So, yes, I was directing the question to you about the report card. You've given him a D for his positions on gun, you know, gun rules. Can you tell us why?
Exactly. Yes. Last year when these votes came up in Congress, Mark Warner did vote in favor of the expanded background checks. However, all of his other votes on gun laws were favoring the gun rights in the NRA. He voted against limiting magazine capacity.
Mm-hmm.
He voted against restricting assault weapons. He also voted for reciprocity in concealed carry, whereby, even though this did not pass, it would allow anyone with a concealed carry permit from any state to also have the ability to conceal carry in any other state, regardless of whether their laws were stricter or not, which is a really, really very bad law, and we're very glad that did not pass.
Right. Okay. So those are kind of checkpoints you used as a roadmap, I think, and I think they're really good points for understanding how, you know, those who are advocating for saner gun laws view the landscape right now in terms of legislation, the different type of legislation that you just mentioned. So, you know, because this is, you know, politics and, you know, people will, you know, and he's going to announce his bid for reelection, how about his opponents? Do they get a pass right now because they're not in office? This is mainly targeting current politicians, right?
Yes. Are you referring to Senator Edwards on the state level?
Well, I just was wondering if whoever is running against Mark Warner, who may emerge to run against him, if they're receiving similar scrutiny.
Anybody running for office is going to receive extreme scrutiny from us. We have vowed to be gun sense voters. We are going to look at everybody's record and how they have voted in the past on these measures, and we will be single issue voters on this. It's
right.
Very important.
Yes, I guess you've heard the tremendously emotional appeal from Richard Martinez, whose son was killed in California over the weekend. Do you share his sentiment? I assume so, based on the report card campaign, that politicians and the NRA are to blame for this proliferation of gun violence.
Absolutely. We had a wonderful opportunity after the terrible tragedy at Sandy Hook. Everybody thought that changes would be made. Everyone wanted changes to be made. Something like 91% of the people really supported expanded background checks. There's absolutely nothing that would help more to prevent unnecessary deaths in this country than to make sure that all commercial sales of firearms have background checks performed on the buyer before they're allowed to purchase a gun. And although a lot of people think that that happens, they think that people have to pass a background check, but there are so many ways to get around that.
Right. Okay. Catherine, your father teaches at Virginia Tech, I believe, and you've been a part of Virginians for Responsible Gun Laws since that tragedy on that campus 7 years ago. Can you give me some insight into how Virginians view gun control in light of that tragedy? And I'm wondering, is the sentiment different in, you know, the mountainous, you know, region there in the southwest of the state?
Mary and I are both located out here. We're Blacksburg's about 45 minutes away from Roanoke. Virginia Tech's about 45 minutes away from Roanoke.
Right.
And my father is still a professor at Virginia Tech, and he actually one of his classrooms. He wasn't in the classroom, but he was scheduled to be in the hour after. Was one of the classrooms that Cho attacked, and I would say that the town of Blacksburg itself is in many ways still healing. It's something of the size that you never are the same. Our mayor reached out to the mayor of Newtown to tell Newtown and to kind of help Newtown in this like world's worst club that you want no new members in. And he reached out to them and said, you know, this is kind of what you can expect and how things will go and how the media will treat you, and just to kind of give the town some sense of what's going to go on. And I think Isla Vista is experiencing the same type of thing right now, and it's horrific. And every time you see a new town join the club, Aurora, other places, you go back to that same place and you never quite get over it. I would say in terms of how do people out here feel in general, I think that there is there's certainly a divide in terms of there's a very the sort of rump of people who that, you know, 9% that that don't want universal background checks. Those folks are certainly maybe concentrated in more rural areas, and so you can feel out here that maybe that's a 20% number, but actually when you do the polling, you find out that really those people aren't any more enriched out here. There was actually a poll of gun owners in Senator Edwards' district, and actually even of gun owners, this is of people who own guns, not of just the general populace out here, but of the gun owners out in these two regions, and even a further southwest district, represented by State Senator Phil Puckett, and I mean, I'm talking about far coal country, the very tip of Virginia. And out there, I believe it was between 80 and 85% of gun owners supported universal background checks.
Wow.
So for these politicians to come to us, and they do come to us and they say, oh, well, you know, these rural areas, blah, 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 don't believe it. It's just not true. You know, you may feel that that 9% or that 15% is louder out in the rural areas just because they're making more noise out there, but that does not mean that they are even a larger percentage of the population. They just aren't.
Wow.
Gun owners.
Right.
In these extremely rural areas support this at a level of, you know, between 80 and 90%, you know, depending on the exact district and the exact poll. But those numbers are unreal. And
wow.
I cannot tell you how expensive it is to do a poll of just gun owners in a pretty, you know, to get a significant enough sample. So the folks who did that polling really cared about finding out that information, and it was, you know, I really think the politicians should start to listen to the people they represent.
Right.
And not this, like, tiny, very adamant rump of folks. They should not be driving the policy conversation.
Okay. Now, if folks want to connect with you about Saturday's action, how can they reach you, Mary and Catherine? Are you still on there, Mary?
Yes, I am.
Oh, okay. If folks want to reach you, I know you're caring for a grandson, and I know I want to let you get back to him soon. But if folks want to get in touch with you about the Saturday's action to participate or get more information, how can they reach you?
Yes, we do have. I am on Facebook, and the best way, if you're not on Facebook, to get in touch with me and get more information about this,
right,
would be to contact me by email.
Okay.
Which is MB, as in boy, Croft, 55, at gmail.com.
Okay, great. MB55 at gmail.com. All right, well, thank you so much. I've been speaking with Mary Croft and Catherine Cable Stromberg of the Blue Ridge Coalition Against Gun Violence. The coalition will have a presence at the Century Plaza in Roanoke when U.S. Senator Mark Warner announces his campaign for re-election this Saturday. Thank you both for being on the ground with us this morning and for being there on Saturday.
Thank you so much for having us.
Okay. So we'll be right back, when we come back, we'll talk about what a silver mine is doing to a town in Guatemala, and maybe many towns in Guatemala. Welcome back to the Thursday edition of Community Watch and Comment, the On the Ground edition, dedicated to direct action, particularly those actions related to sustainable living, the environment, economics, labor, and, of course, the left edge of culture and media. Speaking of raising our voices, that is what WPFW is all about. We here at WPFW, your station for jazz and justice here in the nation's capital, are determined to preserve the station as a listener-supported outlet that can bring you voices from the people that you won't hear elsewhere. And that's because we aren't brought to you by the weapons manufacturers, the oil and gas industry, the mining industries, or Big Pharma, or the telecommunications giants. So it's so important that WPFW be here, so close to the halls of power here in Washington, D.C., and so we can let elected officials know that they are elected to represent the people, not corporations who are not people. You know, according to the Supreme Court, money is speech. And of course, we have lots of issues with that, right? And so this is allowing basically the rich to buy our politicians and elections. So what we can do by supporting WPFW is to show them people power by investing in this people-powered voice of the people funded by your dollars. So the number to call again is 202-588-9739 or it's 1-800-222-9739. If you're listening online, make that pledge. This is the last week of the drive, WPFWFM.org. You can go right there and make your pledge. You know, I want to thank some folks from last week. I wasn't in the studio, but I want to thank Adeyemi Bandele, Go 1199, for renewing his support from Northwest D.C. I want to thank Dory Ladner, veteran civil rights activists. You know, just I'm honored that she pledged on my show. I want to thank an anonymous new member from Northeast Washington, and Justin, a new member from Frederick, Maryland, for calling last week. Thank you so much. It warmed my heart when I saw the numbers and that people had pledged. 202-588-9739 or 1-800-222-9739. This is non-commercial radio. We don't have underwriting. We're not associated with the university. Lou Hill's concept for Pacifica Radio, you know, back in the 40s, that this would be always a listener-sponsored, listener-supported vehicle. We're one of five stations across the country, and we, I think, are special because we're here in D.C., close to the halls of power, and a lot of taxi drivers have us on in the cabs. And so when these people get in the cabs, they can hear a different perspective that's not brought to you by commercial radio. Okay, so I want to talk about an event I went to last night. I heard Oscar Morales of Guatemala, who wants us, those of us in the United States, to know what a mining company is doing in his town. And so he lives in a town called San Rafael Las Flores. And the people in that town are waging a battle against one of the largest silver mines in the world. Opponents of the mine have been shot by security guards, mysteriously killed and imprisoned for months on trumped up charges, but they refused to give in. A year ago, the Guatemalan government declared a state of siege in areas surrounding the mine, suspending constitutional guarantees and putting the military in charge of the region. They raided several houses, arrested various members of the movement. Then, a month ago, a 16-year-old girl, Marilyn Topacio Reynoso, and her father, Alex, both active against the mine, were shot. Alex was seriously injured, and Marilyn was killed. The mine is owned by the Vancouver, British Columbia-based company Tahoe Resources, which also has an office in Reno, Nevada. So last night, Oscar Morales, a fifth-generation resident of San Rafael Las Flores, told a gathering here in D.C. what we can do from here to help stop extreme violence and repression against environmental, indigenous, and community activists in Guatemala. Afterward, I asked him, with the help of an interpreter, what he wants Americans to know about the mine's impact on his town and what we can do to help. Washington, D.C., and to Pacifica Network. So if you want Americans to know one thing from your visit here, what is the most important thing we should know about what is happening in your town?
Okay, thank you. Gracias por la invitación, gracias por la entrevista. Sí, mi nombre es Oscar Morales. Soy de la comunidad.
So thank you. Thank you for the invitation and for this interview. My name is Oscar Morales. I'm from San Rafael Las Flores, a small community in Guatemala. I'm here for the first time in the United States so that people know that a U.S. company exists named Tahoe Resources, which is a mining company, which is affecting my community. It's committing lots of human rights violations and violations of individual rights as well as collective rights of the people in my community. So I'm here in the United States to let people know that this is the only company that is responsible for these violations.
Okay. And if there's one thing that Americans can do, what would you suggest that we do to be involved and take action?
Primero, de ser posible, preguntarle a Tajo que dé su versión sobre el irrespeto a los derechos humanos.
If there was one thing that people could do, it would be to ask Tahoe Resources and force them to respond about talking about their respect or lack of respect for human rights in Guatemala and specifically in San Rafael Las Flores. What we're doing right now is investigating the different mechanisms that might exist to present the case in the United States to force this company to respect human rights. So it's something that we're really looking into right now and helping people to know about the case and about the problem so that in the future they can take action.
You're heading to Canada to be part of a people's tribunal there. What do you hope to accomplish there at the tribunal?
Primero, aprovechar la oportunidad de exponer el caso en Canadá, porque también parte del problema.
So first of all, I'm going to Canada to take advantage of the opportunity to expose this case, to give this case more exposure, because a Canadian company is also involved in this problem. There's a Canadian company called Goldcorp, which is a mining company in Canada, which is also involved in this mine. So the primary objective of this tribunal is to expose this case and to act as judges who will decide whether Tahoe Resources and Goldcorp are responsible for the violations of human rights based on the evidence that we present.
Well, thank you for taking time to talk with us, and you know, hope that we can follow up with you again in the future.
Thank you for joining.
Okay, that was an interview with Oscar Morales. He's an agricultural engineer, environmentalist, and human rights activist. Since 2010, he has been the coordinator of the Committee in Defense of Life and Peace in San Rafael, Las Flores, and president, like community mayor in downtown section of the city. Oscar Morales has been criminalized for resisting mining and demanding civil rights in his community. He spoke last night at a gathering sponsored by a coalition of groups, including the Guatemalan Human Rights Commission. With me in the studio is the person you heard translating for Oscar Morales, as Catherine Johnson is Assistant Director of the Guatemalan Human Rights Commission, USA. Welcome to On the Ground, Catherine.
Thank you so much for having me here on the radio, and thank you for coming to the event last night.
Yeah, well, it was really interesting and just learned a lot. And so tell me the scale of the problem. I understand about the horrific violence, and it sounds like it's been turned in, the town has been turned into a police state. I'm also wondering about the environmental impact.
Certainly, that's one of the main things that Oscar has talked about while he's been here in the United States, is the grave environmental impacts that this mine has had in his town. I'm sure you saw in the photos last night how close this mine is right to people's houses and to the very center of his town. The mine itself is 2 kilometers from the center of the town. And there are, in fact, houses that are 5 to 10 meters from pools that are holding contaminated water contaminated with cyanide and heavy metals, and from the heavy machinery that breaks up the rocks, spewing dust, emitting noise 24 hours a day. There's currently a court case in Guatemala going forward against the mine based on water contamination. There's a river that actually starts in the mine site and then flows through the community. There's also 20 springs on a hillside above the mine that have dried up since the mine started operating in the town. Mm-hmm. So it really is, there's a huge environmental concern because of the population so close to this mine, who have never been consulted. They've never had an opportunity to express their opinion and to approve or not approve the mine that's right in their midst.
From the discussion last night, I got the impression that you know, there's maybe one camp of people who would just like people better compensated for the mine being there, and other people are saying, no, just, we don't want the mine here at all. We don't want your money. Is that an accurate way of kind of describing some of the people who are involved in the issue?
I think what Oscar had mentioned is that there are a few people within the community that are working for the mine, but it's out of 14,000 people, for example, in his town, there are a couple of hundred that have been hired by the mine. And so that camp is really fairly small. Within his movement, that he mentioned the royalties that are paid to the Guatemalan government, which I think you saw the reaction in the crowd yesterday, that right. they were shocked that by law, this mine only has to pay 1% to the Guatemalan government. Voluntarily, they supposedly are paying 4%, which is still way below other Latin American countries.
Right.
But I think what he was also careful to say is that his movement, his Committee in Defense of Life and For Peace, for example, they are not asking for higher royalties. What they want is this mine to leave. Yeah. It's not that they want to be paid more for it, that the environmental impact is so grave, not to mention the social impact, the division that they've seen within the community, pitting family members against each other. Mm-hmm. When he mentions the royalties, it's more that this has been a tool that the mine has used to buy off leaders, to buy off the mayors in the area, and to buy off the central government so that they approve the mine.
Okay. You know, this is Community Watch and Comment, and so we always reserve space here at the bottom of the hour for our listeners to call in. And those of you who, you know the drill, 202-588-0893 is the number to call to, you know, voice your comments on any of the subjects we've been discussing today. The situation here in Guatemala, the gun laws, and the recent horrific shooting, in California. And of course, you know, those of you who may have thoughts and comments on the life and work and legacy of Maya Angelou, certainly we want to provide all the space for that, 202-588-0893. But I don't want you to forget that we are in fundraiser. So that number also, again, is 202-588-9739 or 1-800-222-9739. And you can pledge online as well. This is our last week. This is the last week I'll be asking for your pledge. And, please help me to make my goal. I only need a small $500 for the in the next, in before noon. And I'm not sure if I've had calls yet, but, so I just want to put that out there. And when we come back, we'll go to your calls. So, again, and Catherine will stay here with me in the studio and we can continue to talk. But you can go to your phone and call in to give your comment at 202-588-0893. We'll be right back.
Hi, I'm Brianna, and this is your WPFW Social Justice Calendar for the Washington metro area. Friday, May 16th and Saturday, the 17th, It's Our Economy will convene the Baltimore Economic Democracy Conference, Building Our New Economy Together, to discuss ways to shift power and build wealth in local communities. The discussion will cover a wide range of issues, including affordable housing solutions, renewable energy, food security, worker-owned cooperatives, and money and finance. For more information, visit itsoureconomy.us or call 267-984-8465. If you'd like your event included in the Social Justice Calendar, send a plain text email 2 weeks in advance to socialjusticewpfw@ips-dc.org with event title and date in the subject line and no attachments. The Social Justice Calendar is a public service brought to you by the Institute for Policy Studies in partnership with WPFW, your station for jazz and justice.
And welcome back to the new Thursday edition of Community Watch and Comment, what we're calling On the Ground. I'm your host, Esther Avair. I'm happy to be on Community Comment with the WPFW family. Now it's your turn. For the past half hour, we've been hearing the voices of neighbors who are calling out politicians for caving into the NRA, a community activist trying to save his town from the ravages of mining in Guatemala. And we've talked about Maya Angelou as a freedom fighter. We're opening up the lines at 202-588-0893 to comment so that you can comment on any of those topics today, the legacy of Maya Angelou, the campaign for sane gun laws, or the impact of mining in the developing world and its impact on indigenous people. That's a big plate, but I know WPFW listeners can handle it, while also continuing to support the spring fund drive. I've been speaking to Catherine Johnson, Assistant Director of the Guatemala Human Rights Commission, USA. And what are some of the other issues surrounding the mine? Because, you know, we're actually talking about this one particular town and this one particular mine, but this is actually an issue, you know, throughout Guatemala, right? I mean, can you give us a sense of the scale? We're not just talking about one area, right?
No, there's actually several hundred mine licenses that have been granted, and a few mines that are currently in operation, and then others that are moving toward being in operation. There's the Marlin mine that's been operating for a few years, and again, has massive community resistance against it, as well as another one in El Estor, which has had one person murdered, who was in opposition to it, another person paralyzed, and several women actually gang-raped by mine security and police and military during an eviction. Also, on Friday, there was a mass eviction of several hundred peaceful protesters who have been camped in front of a smaller gold mine right by Guatemala City, just an hour outside of the city, who have been blocking the road for over 2 years, putting their lives and bodies on the line to make sure that that gold mine doesn't move forward. Wow. Unfortunately, on Friday, police came in and, using tear gas, firebombs, throwing rocks at the protesters, evicted them from the road and forced their way into the mine site with the mining equipment. So wow. It really is throughout Guatemala.
Wow. Well, we do have a caller. Carla, just you can say your first name and where you're calling from.
Hi, my name is Chris, and I'm calling from Falls Church, Virginia.
Yes.
And I called because I am a volunteer activist for sensible gun reform. Mm-hmm. And I want to encourage everyone to call their congressperson today. There is an amendment on the floor of the U.S. House of Representatives. It's the Thompson-King Amendment and to H.R. Bill 4660. And the House is voting today to add $19.5 million for background checks nationwide. This is money that would go to the states so they can update their records of people who are dangerously mentally ill and convicted felons and felons who have committed domestic violence offenses in some states. But we need everyone to please call their congressman and ask them to vote for the Thompson-King Amendment today. And that would be a big help. And for all of us in Virginia, we need to call Congressman Scott Ridgel of Virginia Beach. And for anyone who's listening in Virginia Beach, please call him. Thank you so much.
Okay, thank you. Thank you for that information. Caller, you're on the air. Just tell us your first name and where you're calling from.
Yeah, my name is Jim, and I'm from Roanoke, Virginia.
Oh, thank you for listening online.
I just wanted to comment about Senator John Edwards. He was part of that earlier discussion.
Yes.
And so something we don't understand is we're a sliver of blue down here in Southwest Virginia, Roanoke, Blacksburg area. And John Edwards has been a very progressive state senator on numerous issues. But this is one issue that we haven't understood why he has backed down and towed the NRA line. It's something that baffles most of those in this region who consider themselves progressive. He has been out front on marriage equality. He's been out front on so many of the other progressive issues. And over a decade, he's been out front on those. But this is just one that he has shied away from, and we really just don't get it. It's something that he's been confronted numerous occasions on by Virginia Tech family members, family members have been victims of the gun violence at Virginia Tech in 2007. But for some reason, he just won't stand up. I don't know if it's to the NRA, it's to the small number of voters in this region who support extreme gun rights. But it's something that John Edwards needs to be aware of, that voters in this district are tired of his stance on that. And we hope to show that this coming Saturday when he will be there with Senator Warner in downtown Roanoke.
Okay. Well, thank you. Thank you so much for calling in. 202-588-973. Nope. 0893 is the number to call into the studio if you want to comment on any of our topics today. 202-588-0893 is the number to call. But we're still in our fund drive, and I don't want you to forget that other important number, 202-588-9739, our pledge online. So, Catherine, I'm still with me in the studio is Catherine Johnson, Assistant Director of the Guatemala Human Rights Commission. And, you know, I'm just, you've talked to us about the scale of the problem. But this is also kind of connected to the fact that, you know, Guatemala has always been, I think, one of the most violent countries. You know, just for a long time, you know, the people have been kind of under a series of kind of, it seems like dictators or just kind of repressive regimes. So how is the kind of proliferation of mining there and the impact on people kind of connected with this, you know, government that, you know, many consider pretty corrupt?
It's a government that's not only considered corrupt, it's considered very pro-military and very pro-business, unfortunately. And this government has brought those two sentiments together and has used the military to repress peaceful activists in order to open the door to international and domestic businesses in the country. And you're right that this is a continuation of a history of repression of activists in Guatemala. Unfortunately, Guatemala suffered a 36-year civil war from 1960 to 1996, in which over 200,000 people, it's estimated, were killed. The majority of those were indigenous people in Guatemala. Mm-hmm. And there was a lot of hope that after 1996, with the signing of the peace accords, that we would see significant reforms, both to the army and really a move toward democracy. And unfortunately, Guatemala really hasn't seen that. And these struggles right now between peaceful environmental and indigenous activists in Guatemala, between them and these large corporations, mining, hydroelectric companies, and others, are so reminiscent of the same conflicts that were going on during the internal armed conflict in Guatemala, which is why there's so much fear amongst these activists, not just because of the violence that I've already mentioned, various people killed, use of the military, complete militarization of some of these zones, but this history of violence that Guatemala has.
Okay. Well, I have someone to thank, Andrew Feeney from Northwest DC for renewing support. Thank you, Andrew. Thank you so much for supporting On the Ground, the Thursday edition of Community Watch and Comment this morning. And I think that's brought me down to 4:65 to go in the next 15 minutes. I know we can do it. I have some people who I know they promised that they were going to pledge and become sustainers. So I need you to, you know, get off your computer or get on your computer or do something and call 202-588-9739 or 1-800-222-9739 or pledge online right there on the website. Now, I know, Catherine, that your organization, the Guatemala Human Rights Commission, is also trying to get the attention of Secretary of State, John Kerry, right? So this is an email campaign. You would like the U.S. to stop funding the Guatemalan army, and this is kind of related to what we were just talking about in terms of the violence. What do you want to accomplish with that? I mean, obviously stopping the funding, but tell me some details about that.
Sure. In fact, there's already restrictions on U.S. foreign operations funding to the Guatemalan army because of this history of human rights abuses and the ongoing human rights abuses in Guatemala. There are a large chunk of foreign operations funds that can't go to the Guatemalan army. What we want is those restrictions be maintained, because if they're lifted, that's a green light to the current government to continue these human rights abuses against peaceful protesters and a green light to use the military, to continue to use the military as police, which is obviously really dangerous. So we're asking people to sign a petition to Secretary of State John Kerry, which you can find on our website, which is www.ghrc-usa.org, and we're just about to close off that petition. So we would love people to go and sign that petition as soon as possible so that we can deliver it to the State Department and continue this really important tool to pressure the Guatemalan government to respect the human rights of its own citizens.
Okay, great. Now, I'm looking at the I guess is maybe this could be like a sample email or just kind of like your information about this email campaign. Send an email to Secretary Kerry urging him to maintain restrictions on military aid. Guatemala's UN Truth Commission report not only attributes 93% of all human rights violations and acts of violence to the Guatemalan state, which included over 600 massacres, it also finds the U.S. responsible for playing a large role in providing military assistance and training to the Guatemalan army during the conflict. It was not until 1990, 7 years after the most violent years of Guatemala's internal armed conflict, that the U.S. enacted a full ban on Department of State aid to the Guatemalan army. Over the past 2 decades, restrictions on the ban have been weakened. Now we face the possibility of seeing the restrictions lifted completely. Currently, the State Department funds may only go to the Guatemalan army if the Secretary of State certifies that the army has met certain qualifications that you list here. So people can get more information by going to your website, www.ghrc-usa.org. That's ghrc-usa.org. Yeah. Have you gotten, what kind of response have you gotten to the campaign so far?
We're getting pretty close to 4,000 signatures right now, which is why we're getting ready to wrap it up and then deliver it to the Department of State, because the certification could actually happen anytime. We don't really know what the timeline is, so want to make sure that we get these signatures to them as soon as possible. So thank you to everybody who signed. I think it's a really important tool to pressure the Guatemalan government to respect human rights of its people.
Yeah. Tell me a little bit about the coalition of organizations that are involved with this issue. What are some of the other groups that are working with you?
So the groups that work specifically to bring Oscar here to the United States and that have worked on setting up his visit here, one is the Network in Solidarity with the People of Guatemala. And they actually have an email campaign as well going on, trying to get various companies to divest from Tahoe Resources. And so if you check out their website at nisgua.org, you can send an email there. There's also the Center for International Environmental Law, which is a D.C.-based organization, and they work on several different issues, including mining in Guatemala, looking at it especially from an environmental impact. And then Oxfam America was also brought Oscar to the United States and is bringing up to Canada to participate in the tribunal that he mentioned last night. And so they're based in Boston, but have an office here in D.C. And there's several different organizations, a lot of them Canadian, because so much of the mining is actually carried out by Canadian companies. So there's various organizations they work with in Canada, as well as, of course, organizations in Guatemala, Guatemalan organizations like Oscar's Committee in Defense of Life, but the work on the ground right there.
Right. So we want to, with our time left, I guess, you know, I'll probably have to get up out of this seat in about 5 minutes, but I guess there's technically 10 minutes left in the show. So I have 10 minutes to raise $465. And I know I can do that. End my spring fund drive, my first fund drive, doing community watch and comment on Thursdays, you know. So I would ask everyone who hasn't pledged to go to the phone or go to your computer and make a pledge for a space where community activists, those taking direct action, you know, in an increasingly corporatized world where, you know, the average person finds it more and more difficult to have a voice and to compete against the massive amounts of money that are influencing our political process, you know, and basically all aspects of our lives. And the pledge line number is 202-588-9739. We're still able to take your calls on the air if you want to comment on the situation in Guatemala. You have thoughts on Maya Angelou, or also the issue of saner gun laws and trying to curb the tragedies that continue to happen on seemingly a weekly basis. So that number is 202-588-0893, but don't forget to pledge. And this is our last week for the pledge drive for this show, so I would appreciate that. So what are some of the other issues, Catherine, that you think are important for people to know about, I guess, in the larger scope of work that you have?
I think One of the other areas that we've worked on is seeking truth and justice for the crimes committed during the internal armed conflict in Guatemala. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, after a couple of steps forward over the last year, including a huge one was former head of state Efraín Ríos Montt, who ruled Guatemala for just over a year from 1982 to 83, was actually convicted of genocide in Guatemala, which is the first time ever in the world that a head of state was convicted of genocide in his own country as opposed to in an international court. Unfortunately, the Constitutional Court in Guatemala overturned that decision just 10 days later and rewound the case significantly, leaving those victims once again without justice for these horrific crimes. The genocide charge was based on at least 1,700 people that were specifically identified and killed in the Ixchel region. Ixchel is one of the 22 Mayan groups in Guatemala, as well as several massacres that were committed in the area, several acts of sexual violence that all led to this genocide charge. And so, unfortunately, after that step forward, like I said, the case was overturned just 10 days later, and there hasn't been significant moves over the last year to holding Guatemalan officials accountable for the human rights violations that were committed during the war. And again, we see such a strong link to these current struggles and these current violations, because as long as there's no justice for the 200,000 people that were killed during the 36-year internal armed conflict, the Guatemalan justice system will remain weak. People will know in Guatemala that they can commit these kinds of crimes with impunity, that they can destroy entire villages, that they can repress protesters, and that they won't be brought to justice.
Right. You know, when you talk about that, that just reminds me of the importance, the just extreme importance of having media where people can tell their stories and people can break out of the narrative of whatever the corporate media is trying to spin for that day or week or month. Because, you know, what you're talking about, it's almost like if you turn on cable TV or you don't even hear anything about that. It's like ancient history. It's like people have moved on and they're talking about the latest Beyonce video or something, you know. And so I just think that I want to urge everyone to, take in what Catherine's telling us this morning and go to your phones and make a pledge to support the station that brings you the people's stories and the people's stories that aren't getting told elsewhere. 202-588-9739 is the number to call, or 1-800-222-9739. This is our last week, and I'd like to make my goal. You can also pledge online at WPFWFM.org. The goal for our show, I think, was 500, and we have a little ways to go yet, but I think that we could do it. So, What are some of the next activities that you'll be working on and that maybe people could join in and participate in?
Well, we always have activities here in Washington, D.C., and though our next big event probably won't be until the fall, but we give out an award every fall, the Human Rights Defenders Award, to honor people like mining rights activists, like those that are seeking truth and justice for their work in Guatemala. So we'll have that at the end of September, and we'll be sending out information about that. And we'll also have a fall tour, probably in the Midwest. But if you want to know more about upcoming events, you can sign up for our listserv, which is, you can sign up on our website, which again is ghrc-usa.org. And we'll send out more information about events, but also about concrete ways that people here in the United States can take action to support human rights defenders, environmental activists, and others in Guatemala.
One of the things that I think I discussed, there was another person in the audience last night who was kind of representing the issue from the side of the jeweler, and he was talking. I was telling him that it would be helpful to for me as a consumer, because I actually prefer silver than gold, is to know how I could pressure like some store or a retail establishment that I might support to pressure them to not buy from Tahoe Resources, but I guess it's not really that clear cut, because you don't really know who was supplying various batches of metals to companies. But I know it would just be helpful to me. Is it possible that at some point the campaign will get to that point where they can tell consumers, you know, well, let this retailer know not to buy from Tahoe Resources?
That was a really interesting idea that he mentioned, and he used the, I think, a mine in Alaska specifically as an example that this was a successful tactic for. So it's certainly something that we'll look into. So the two sort of types of actions that I think that we'll look into is, one, targeting investors, because a lot of people end up with their pension funds or through their towns, through their churches, are actually invested in a lot of these companies without even knowing it. And so we'll be targeting, our partners are looking into who's invested into these companies to encourage them to divest. We'll also certainly look into this aspect of people that are consuming the metals themselves.
Okay, well, I want to thank Catherine Johnson, Assistant Director of the Guatemala Human Rights Commission, for joining me in the studio this morning. Thank you. Thanks to Andrew Feeney again from Northwest DC for calling. And thanks to all the people who I know are on the line or heading to their computer to pledge. And that will do it for me on the Thursday edition of Community Watch and Comment. A special thanks to Mike Nasella on the board this morning. Thanks to Michael Byfield and Lucy Murphy for production assistance. And thank you for listening and calling in and supporting during the fund drive. You can reach the show at onthegroundshow.org, or you can follow us on Facebook and Twitter at On The Ground Show. Peace. Stay tuned for, I think, Dr. Nick. And don't forget the blues, followed by the DC Politics Hour with Eugene DeWitt Kinlow, and then the Empower Hour with Deshuna Spencer. Peace. I'm